Welcome to the Healing Ground Movement, a podcast dedicated to revolutionizing how we think about our bodies and our health. I'm your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, DC, and I have lived my life in pursuit of holistic healing and care that goes beyond symptom management. If you've been listening and like what you're hearing, head over to your favorite platform and leave us a review so we can reach more people with our important message. Enjoy today's episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Carly Hudson, and we have another fabulous returning guest today, Dr. Courtney Klein.
Now, hey,
welcome. Join us. We've got Zoom going again, so we get another awesome view of your fabulous bookshelf, which I
like to call it my cave at this point.
Love it. I wish I had a cave in my house, and I'm sure many of our listeners also wish they had a cave in their house.
Yeah.
Do good for you. We had Dr. Courtney join us kind of right at the onset of the pandemic as it hit the United States. So if you want to check back to episode 40, we discussed a lot about different types of trauma, acute trauma, and how to pivot when everybody was going into lockdown and sudden quarantine and sudden rug being pulled out from underneath us. Now it's 5 months later and we have moved into something that feels more like a chronic trauma and a chronic uncertainty. So we invited Dr. Courtney back to discuss again how we can manage this on a personal emotional level and what tools we might have gained over the last 5 months that we maybe don't appreciate that we have. So thank you for joining us again.
Thank you for having me again. In some ways kind of sorry I'm back because that's because we've been here doing these kinds of things for 5 months now, but hopefully it won't be for too much longer.
Right. I always say that to my patients when they come back. So good to see you. Sorry you're here. So good to see you. Sorry you're here. And how have you been doing over the last 5 months? We were talking a little bit about how, you know, no one is spared from the chronic exhaustion and stress of managing all of this.
Yeah, so in you and I checking in just before now, I had told you, I think, three times that I'm tired just of all of it. And I actually mentioned that in the last podcast too, that it's just this kind of ongoing ticking away or cutting away at our endurance at times. Hopefully it doesn't feel like that all the time, but this unknown ending, the constantly changing information, it makes me a little bit tired. But otherwise, I've not coined the term, I didn't make this up, but I tend to use the term that I heard, I'm COVID fine. So I'm fine, but it's all in the terms of kind of the current environment and situation. So I'm fine. I wish things were better. And so I'm just kind of COVID fine right now.
I like that one. I've been using COVID adjusted. My COVID adjusted standard is
exact same. Yeah.
COVID fine has a nice ring to it. But it is that uncertainty. And so that's mostly what we were talking about and what we're hoping to dive into here is, you know, I've been observing with my patients coming out in the world, because of course, now that I'm back in my office, we are not a virtual service. People are coming in, they are allowing themselves to be touched, engage with other people, go into an office building. You know, there's a lot of questions about, should I be doing this? And as we're going back to school and children, and should I, and should I, and should I? And there is no right answer. I mean, we get conflicting answers, even our two, you know, highest levels of information on healthcare, the CDC and the World Health Organization, will say opposite things at times. So we are left with a pile of uncertainty and still the need to make decisions because life is going on, though, in COVID-fine terms.
Right. So how do we live with uncertainty and continue to hopefully thrive, but certainly survive? Yes.
Any tips and thoughts on that, or even just understanding what it is to live with that uncertainty?
Sure. I think so we can very easily, I think, move from uncertainty to it's stressful. Just thinking in terms of that, that living in uncertainty for a lot of different examples and situations, not necessarily COVID, waiting for something to happen, waiting for an answer, realizing one doesn't have an answer. Anyway, that can be stressful. And so the first thing I'd say as a psychologist, as somebody who tries to consider kind of human nature and where did this come from and frankly, how is this helpful ends up being something I like to move towards a lot and encourage my clients and people to move towards a lot. The stress response and being a little bit more riled up or a little bit elevated, even in our systems, for the fact that we don't know something is a natural response. You can thank your body for having that. At least we're working well in our systems to become a little nervous or agitated or stressed about something that is important, something that we don't yet have the answer to, something that might affect our children or how we're working or, you know, safety and health. And so uncertainty and consequently stress and tension is all good. What's not good right now is that we don't have an endpoint, that we don't have an answer, that now we've got this chronic sense, which is what you mentioned 5 months later. Now it's chronic. But at some level, hopefully, there's still that appreciation. Doesn't feel like that all the time, but appreciation that we're still having natural responses to what's going on in the world and to what's going on in our culture, in our systems, in our families. So accepting the response to uncertainty is the first part. I'd also say then we can't stand still. Okay, so great. So we're uncertain and we're stressed and we don't know what's coming next or when something is going to change. And standing still, so to speak, staying stuck, that is probably the worst way to go, if possible, to not just stand still. That is what can lead to increased trauma or a bigger trauma response or the development of PTSD. Post-traumatic stress disorder. Pardon me. And I will go ahead and continue to refer to that as we go, because another goal I would have for today is to just offer up ways to prevent long-term trauma to this and trauma symptoms.
Well, I think that's one of the things that most people are, or at least the impression that I'm getting in my conversations, it's what's going to happen in the long term? How is this going to affect my children in the long term, whether I send them to school or whether I don't? If I see my elderly relative or I don't, it's that long term implication that is causing immediate, what we talked about in the last episode, which I failed to mention, was episode 40. So if you want to go back and find it, episode 40, where Dr. Courtney and I talked about, you know, the responses to trauma is that fight or flight. So that fighting desire to niggle and pick at people, which we'll talk about again in a little bit, or that freeze, which you just brought up as one of our not so great choices, to do nothing. So it's about why either of those is less productive than we think it is, because I think it's a little bit of a, maybe it's a myth. Could I go so far as to say, well, I'll just do nothing until I get more information is better than rushing ahead or stepping ahead?
Particularly if you're referring to, because making a decision has those long-term effects that we're trying to weigh and take as so important. But I would also validate for anybody who might have had this thought or is feeling this sometimes, we usually don't have to wait this long for information and for when something's going to end. So we've also never encountered this before. I'd say the old strategy that many people probably employed, which is I'm going to wait for more information and then I will decide. I mean, we're encouraged to do so. We're encouraged to not be impulsive. I think at this point we're past impulsivity, but it might not be good to keep waiting either. And so instead, it's maintaining this level of flexibility, and this can help reduce trauma, but this is also a great way to approach any of these decisions right now, I think, is maintaining some level of flexibility the entire time we're going through this, where you then make a decision based on the best information you can gather, while also remaining flexible to possibly changing that decision or altering it in some way when more information comes out. So this could be when a vaccine is finally available. This could be if your local school system changes something again and all of a sudden then you have more options or fewer options. I dare say we're actually finished with all the choices we have, but some of us still need to make some choices. So it's holding out, not in a nervous making way, well, we're, oh gosh, there still could be change, but accepting. I think the best thing we can do right now is continue to hope for different change and be open to it, so that's likely going to enhance what you did. It's likely going to improve the decision you already made. So that would be my first approach.
Yeah, it's making an invitation to hold a very challenging but necessary mental exercise in cognitive dissonance. And that is that what I see in front of me is true and true enough for me to engage and act with it to the best of my knowledge and ability. Mm-hmm. And I might find out later it's not. Or at least some degree of it might not be. And having what I really start to feel is the strength and the courage to hold both of those simultaneously mm-hmm. and not become frozen by it.
And again, we've not ever really had to do this. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's been a year where it's been school decisions with, well, they might actually stay home later or vice mm-hmm. versa. They might actually be able to go back to school. This was never part of kind of planning for the fall school year to begin. So that's just one example of all the things we have to kind of wait for what industry we're working in to kind of make changes or the company you're with or mm-hmm. potentially new job opportunities if you're needing one that might be coming. In addition to, of course, vaccines and other kind of healthcare, we can start to understand even better prevention and care of the virus. So I'll kind of go into a little further. So we do actually have more resources in that idea of make the best decision you have. One of them being, and I won't go too far because a lot of people I think did have different experiences last time, is that we had a last time in a way. We had that first kind of shutting down quarantining where we all needed to socially isolate at a much greater degree. Mm-hmm. And in those times, I'm hoping that one learned what they could do with their time, what still let them feel connected, which TV shows they wanted to binge, what kind of books to pick up, how to balance a workday with kiddos at home, or at least not be new at that anymore. So mm-hmm. I want to, you know, point out that we actually have a little bit of wisdom about how this has gone, how we've been doing, and what we know now doesn't work. Or could still be rearranged again, so to adapt a little bit more, even 5 months in. So this does not mean we're going back into a quarantine. Although if we do, I hope that people do remember that they've done this before. That first time was brand new, now it's not. However, the other piece we could do is even after 5 months, if you had made some sort of plan, you can change that plan. So if it was, okay, I'm gonna be with the kids all through the day, 8 straight hours, or 10 straight hours, or let's be honest, 24 hours for many primary parents. Yes. You could say, you know what, after 5 months, it turns out I would really love half an hour off at lunch. And so maybe you talk with your partner about, can you rearrange something that you're doing so that I could just have this breathing time? I was doing it okay. Now I'm tired of it. Now I'd love to see if we can rearrange something. Now we could maybe be flexible and change because you kind of know how it's been. And hopefully you know what works and what doesn't work for you personally. So that would be something that you do have in the midst of this uncertainty.
And have your own awareness of your adaptability and how you want to flow within it.
And this is not all new.
And to your point earlier, I kind of wanted to stop and bring it before, is that you were, when you were talking about the stress response and how this is natural and that thank goodness we have it, it means your body's working. I think there is also an opportunity to normalize it. What we talk about the pandemic, we talk about COVID, it's like, this has never happened before. This is crazy. And it's very easy to use that almost as an excuse to go into that freeze. Like, we just have never done this. But we have that uncertainty and that stress response because we've done some version of uncertainty before.
Oh, yes.
We have, any number of us have had to unfortunately wait with uncertainty as a loved one suffered from disease and not having the answer, or gone through unemployment before and not known when we would get a job or what job that would be, and trying to make life choices around that version of unemployment. Anyone struggling with conception and waiting to start a family. All of these are uncertainties with lack of answers and no predictable end in sight. And I'm sure there are many more options, but I'm sure if you think back in the catalog of your life, you've done something like this. And your body has adapted, or you've had your response to it, and now it is this much more global, severe, amplified version. But even in that sense of familiarity, there is something that is not entirely new about it. Would you say that's fair?
Absolutely. Yes. We have these experiences. They just have not been in this situation. Mm-hmm. Our bodies have been doing this for centuries as human beings have gone on. And that's where we have those natural responses now that have always worked for human beings. And in each individual life, there's obviously been uncertainty. Hopefully we took information, made a decision, sought out what would work for us. And that piece I'll now kind of go into next. So we can go with that concept of, I've been through at least a level of this before this whole time. Mm-hmm. The whole time during this, starting with usually depending on the state, but starting with the quarantine, and then also other forms of uncertainty and decision-making we've had in our lives. We can also use what our personal values are. So you continue to have your own values. You continue to have what makes you comfortable, what type of expert you'll listen to, what family advice you'll take. And so I encourage you to really reach into identifying, well, what is going to be my value here? Do I want to promote this aspect or this aspect? And I'm being very careful to not at all say what my personal recipe has been. But if one's value ends up being more external around kind of helping others in society, there are ways to do that. If it's really sticking to family and really protecting maybe somebody who would be more vulnerable based on what we understand or not, but keeping oneself intact with what makes us comfortable and what we believe in and value ends up being very helpful. I like to use the measure of, at the end of the day, can you reflect on your day and be proud of what you chose? Can you be comfortable with what you did? Can you fall asleep at night pretty easily? It's something to encourage teenagers to learn how to do, just with any kind of decision, to mm-hmm. follow kind of what makes you proud, what is okay for you at the end of the day. And we can do that now too with this uncertainty. Well, what are my values? What are my core beliefs? What is going to be content, make me confident about what I did? So that's another level.
And I like coming into that value and that core belief, because it really does highlight that, you know, what your core belief is versus mine may or may not be the same thing. And we see a lot of decisions coming out of different core beliefs. One of the more common debates I see happening is quality of life versus quantity of life. Mm-hmm. And depending on that core belief, you're going to make different decisions about, I want to live as long as I can. I will shelter in place and give up this year if it guarantees me, you know, X amount more time. Or the quality of the life I live while I'm here is important, and I'm going to make choices based in that value. Now, you're not going to change that value of either person, and it is going to reflect their choices. The important thing is, do you go to bed at night happy with the choices you made, not happy with the choices your neighbor made?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But let's go into, and it's something else you and I talked about just before we started recording, would be putting out negativity, right? Putting out negative judgment to the world, voicing that part of it. I hope that most, if not everybody, is not proud of that at the end of the day either. So another thing we could do is reflect on, hey, did I scare somebody? Did I call out somebody? Did I negatively comment on something on social media? Did I spread negativity? And this is not some hoo-hoo kind of thing, but I think in this world of how we're all experiencing some level of the pandemic and having to respond and behave in this context of COVID and our situation, we don't have to also be negative. We could definitely disagree with what somebody else is doing, but that's one level. The next level of saying it out loud, making a person feel badly, making oneself propped up compared to somebody else. I hope that we're not proud of that at the end of it. And that would be part of what we could say we're doing right now in this uncertainty is, I didn't hurt somebody else. I did not affect somebody else negatively. I did not bother someone. I did not judge someone for living by their values, which are different than mine. Mm-hmm. That would be something we can still control, by the way, during all of this strangeness.
And I think an important thing to highlight again that we were chatting about before is, but that desire to judge or shame or devalue what another person does is one of our perhaps more rusty tools that we might want to weed out of our toolbox, but one of the tools that we as humans use to validate our own choices in uncertainty. So again, I would ask you to think back on that time, not COVID, when you were dealing with a great deal of uncertainty. And do you recall yourself, or did a family member lovingly, hopefully, reflect on you? You're being a little snippy. You're being a little judgy. because it's a way to externalize that discomfort of, I don't actually know what I'm doing and I'm really not feeling great about that.
Absolutely. And that is happening. I think maybe a person would experience it very directly, say in a grocery store. Mm-hmm. But we see it on the news. We see it depending on kind of which channel or which social media outlet we're paying attention to, perhaps talking between friends and mm-hmm. talking about it. Yes, absolutely. Human nature, that if we're uncertain or if we're trying to make our best decision, it also feels a little bit better. It feels a little more comfortable if I then kind of elevate myself over somebody else's decision to reinforce what I chose. So, oh, she's not doing that. Or gosh, that seems very irresponsible, in order to make myself feel better or encourage myself mm-hmm. for what I just did. We are very apt to doing that, prone to doing that. I would like to then add, we don't have to do that part. And certainly not audibly, certainly not in writing online, where then it really is causing more division. It really is causing more negativity. I think that ideally, and I wish I could say I do this all the time, but you know, I'm sometimes or very flawed myself, but we could do that to ourselves or with a friend and say, oh, well, that felt really different what that other person was doing, but I don't have to spread that outwardly anymore. And mm-hmm. instead I could say, why am I feeling like I needed to degrade something else? Why am I feeling like I need to have an opinion or be judgy? Mm-hmm. Oh, because I'm feeling really stressed about what I need to do, what I'm forced to do, what mm-hmm. I should be doing. And that can be a different direction to take instead of putting that negativity out there. What else would I need?
And that self-witnessing becomes far more productive. That piece that you're just saying, that what else do I need, is like, I see someone walking by my house, and depending on my views, they're wearing a mask, they're not wearing a mask, and I am now mad at them. And I can self-witness, and why did I judge that? Because I'm so tired of having this reality, and what can I do to take care of myself? Right. Instead of, I think I'm going to go tell that person my peace of mind and let them know how much they suck. That's not a productive, that ends in a lack of productivity. That ends in you getting riled up and having this anger, which is not productive and doesn't necessarily leave at that point. It's like, you know, eating too many sweets, expecting to feel filled at the end of it. And then that person feels shamed and awful for whatever choice they made based on their values, their health, their financial needs, all of these pieces.
So it might short term make us feel a little better, more justified, a little more confident in what we were doing by pointing a finger, but spreading shame, mm-hmm. I really hope that doesn't help a person fall asleep at night. Mm-hmm. We can do the initial part. Man, I'm nervous about this. Man, I'm tired. We don't have to do that. And you're wrong.
Yeah. It's that end point. So again, we're not saying you can't have a differing opinion. We can't say that what other people do isn't allowed to make you uncomfortable, but perhaps we can all be a little more human and a little bit more loving with each other based on how we decide to share that discomfort, or use that as a personal awareness versus then a vendetta.
Oh my gosh, at some level, we're all guessing at this and we're all in it. Yeah. We do not have one straight answer. We mm-hmm. do not even have one successful vaccine yet. So there's, and as I said last podcast and earlier in this one, is we don't have an end point. So yeah, that person who may have chosen not to wear that mask or whatever example we want to put up there mm-hmm. is still in the same world where they don't have all the facts, we don't have all the facts. Yeah. And so we can also hopefully remember that this mm-hmm. is affecting all of us.
Yeah, and where we're looking at it, and even the argument of what are our resources and where are we going for, you pick any of these topics, even like looking for that vaccine that may or not become effective, and you can go down the rabbit hole of, is it ever going to be effective? Or is the virus going to mutate? And is it going to mutate to be less of an impact or more of an impact? There is so much uncertainty in all of these places and where you're looking for on values. Are you waiting for the virus to mutate? Are you waiting for a vaccine? Both of those are a waiting game. And we are now currently in this reality of everyone is waiting and trying to assimilate and work within what they have.
Hopefully we're all trying and we're all assimilating and staying flexible yeah. and not just standing still or staying stuck.
So why is the stuckness such a problem for encountering perhaps later PTSD and trauma in our life?
Good question. So I will go ahead and roll into kind of what we understand can prevent development of PTSD and ongoing trauma. So PTSD is not formally diagnosed until a few months after symptoms start to show. So also just good for maybe anybody to know. I don't just get PTSD when something bad happens. I may develop it as like a full-blown kind of disorder, right? Post-traumatic stress disorder. But in the beginning, we do get to have stress responses and anxiety responses and responding to that was awful and I never want that to happen again and I was afraid and it was potentially painful. And so I'm just talking about kind of any bad thing that could be happening. And that if our trauma symptoms go on, we have ongoing nightmares. We have ongoing difficulties adapting back to the world being safe again, or you know, that person having gone away who may have hurt us or something. If I'm continuing to struggle with that, and we did kind of talk about that last time, if the body is continuing to just have that response of the world is now dangerous and unsafe and I have to continue to be alert and pent up and hypervigilant to protecting myself now from now on, that's a really tough way to live in the world. That's a way to be frozen as well with, well, now I'm just always going to protect myself and I cannot calm down again and be vulnerable again. But there are other people who have a big response to a stressor, that natural, I'm anxious now, I want to protect myself, I want to never be hurt again, who don't develop into stuck symptoms and staying with all of this vigilance, hypervigilance around not being able to calm down again and trying to avoid that trauma or that stressor forever, which could be that PTSD actual kind of diagnosis and stance in the world. And we've studied, as our actually the world has studied, what prevented some people from developing it and others from not developing full-blown PTSD. So this is something to apply right now. We're all kind of in this chronic state of uncertainty, which is our word today, but also chronic state of stress. And one could already conclude chronic trauma happening to us. So let me just kind of simplify things a little bit more. We need to feel like we have options. We need to feel like we have hope. We need to feel like we have endpoints and things we can kind of count on. I used to joke about, I can pull the all-nighters to study for finals like 3 or 4 times a year, depending on which school program I was in at the time. I can't do that every day of the year. So I can even do that extreme level for a little while. And many of us can do that as long as we kind of know it's temporary, as long as we know there's an end point. When the last final was finished, I went to sleep, right? So I could do differently.
You garner the hustle until you know, like, okay, this is where I can do my drop dead exhaustion. Right. But right now we're kind of in the perpetual hustle.
Right. So my body staying at that high level of perpetual hustle would have had a lot of other impacts on me if I did not just finally get to kind of breathe out and relax, say when finals was finished. I would have to then have disrupted sleep for a really long time. I would have to probably have a different caloric intake because of how much my body needed to be charged up and ready and hypervigilant. I may not have been as receptive to other people. My own children, if at that time I had also been a parent, because I would be constantly alert and in a state. And so that could be happening to people now. Again, going back to how do other people survive this? One big way to do it is to kind of have good health care, good physical health care, and also mental health care, depending on the level that the person needs going into this. So let's take another example. The finals thing might not apply to the rest of this. So let's take Hurricane Katrina, which is a long time ago at this point. And let's take the people who were pretty physically and mentally healthy before Hurricane Katrina fared better afterwards. If one had chronic pain or a severe illness and then experienced the trauma of the hurricane, they don't fare as well. If one had mental health symptoms that were untreated, that were unknown, maybe difficultly managed, they would likely go up afterwards. So this would be an encouragement to kind of maintain one's own health physically and mentally. We could add emotionally as much as you can right now to continue to endure and to then be able to relax and release after all of this. Another one is,
I like that as an example, because so often we hear, and it's so easily to toss away, that we have to take care of ourselves if we're going to be able to be healthy and take care of others. It's the whole put on your own oxygen mask thing.
Right.
And one of the, what I think is a silver lining, because there's got to be some hope in here, one of the silver linings of this whole experience is that one-time self-care is no longer an option. We can't go have a spa day with the girls or something like that. You know, it has to be more of a small dose, diligent thing. But what you just outlined for us, taking a very real tragedy and traumatic experience here in the United States, is that it really matters. It really matters for your ability to survive. And then you take what we do know about COVID and the current virus, and how if you have a weaker immune system, if your body is less cared for, if you have less vitamin D, having not gotten outside, the effects are worse. So we see now in various different lenses that if you're not taking care of yourself psychologically, emotionally, physically, you start from a disadvantaged running place and you're going to feel these effects more negatively. Now, does that mean that necessarily we can't dive in and start trying to take care of ourselves now and put that earnest effort in because you started off sidelines, now you're a little SOL?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
That's what's so great about our bodies. We can adapt. We can be flexible even in, I guess we're running now. I guess we're taking walks. I guess this is my body responding to me. I guess we're eating like this now. And our bodies are fantastic about adapting to that. So we could definitely add that in, including that emotional support too. So that kind of links to the next piece, which would be communal, familial, social support. Mm-hmm. Your partner, your family members, anybody who you consider to be in your community. Those of us and those people in Hurricane Katrina who were affected by it more directly, who had social supports and a community, fared better after such a trauma happened in order to just kind of adapt again. So if you just imagine the simple other side of that would be being alone in such a tragedy or trauma. And then also afterwards, just being alone, feeling that one does not have supports, it doesn't go as well. It makes us continue to stay vigilant or upset or very isolated about the world. So we could do that now as well in relation to this COVID situation, including maybe you've been a little tired of the Zoom meetings or any of the other kind of social endeavors. People even more so are saying, I don't know what to talk about. That's why I say my answer is I'm COVID fine. I haven't really been doing anything, but I'm fine. It's fine. but I would really still encourage that we keep those connections. They may not be as frequent. They may not be as varied, but having any form of a community, people to relate to, people to support us, really helps us get through this and not stay stuck.
Well, and again, it gives that opportunity to normalize what is happening in your community. Because ideally, I mean, I know that there are certainly exceptions and not all of us have family members who see the world the way we see the world. But when we choose our chosen community, often reflects the same values, often reflects the same areas of comfort. So that when you do see these things that are making you uncomfortable outside of your controlled bubble, you have someone within your community where you can say in a safe space, I just witnessed something and that made me feel uncomfortable. Yeah, I see. That made me feel uncomfortable too. And now it's a shared experience that's productive for the two of you rather than reaching out in a shaming manner outside of that community.
Right, where that thing happened again, where they have put out negativity into the world or to that person, shame, that kind of thing. Yes. So having our community helps us to stay validated, supported, afraid together, but connected.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So people who stay connected don't develop as much trauma. Okay. So now I'll kind of give a bigger and yet basic, so very broad and general way that we understand trauma develops, just kind of originally. So not this PTSD develops a few months later when our symptoms stop or don't stop happening and when we can't relax or can't kind of feel safe again. Is basically, why do some people develop trauma? Well, often it's, I had this expectation for the world or this thing that was about to happen. And then something else happened instead. And now I can't justify the two. So a bunch of them. Let's do Katrina. I'm supposed to be able to live in a city or an area of the country that stays safe and is not life-threatening with weather. The weather does not threaten me. The weather cannot cause death and casualties and destruction. And here it's happening. And I don't know how safe my world can be anymore. What can I count on? Another one would be, I thought my medical procedure or birth process even was going to go this way. It turned out it had to go this way. I was told there an intervention was needed, that a blood transfusion or a C-section or in other medical procedures, I would recover faster than I did. And we need to come to terms with, okay, that's not what I believed. That's not what I predicted. This other thing happened. How do I manage that? So pandemic, the school year starting. I thought the school year was going to start this way. This is how it's always started. This is what I can count on from my school. It would be daily childcare in a way. I would be able to go to work. I could go to an office. All of these things we expected would be happening in 2020. And instead, all this stuff is happening instead and otherwise. And so how do we continue to sit with all of this? And whether or not I actually have the answer for that part, what I'm saying is a lot of what's happening to a lot of us is we thought it would go this way or any version of that for us in our lives, and it's going this way. And I feel really stuck in that.
Yeah. And even just acknowledging that there is a necessary pivot to plan B. And oftentimes it's not in our control. Katrina was not in anyone's control for that matter. Emergency interventions in health. We want to have that body autonomy. We want to come from our place of value. And when that goes outside of our realm of control, and yet we still have to adapt and live within that world, it asks a lot of our flexibility, our engagement with uncertainty, and our willing to really examine what our value is. You know, it's when, if we say we take the school example, if my value on a very superficial level is, yeah, I want my kid to get an education, they'll go to school, and that's the only way to do it. When that option gets changed in front of us, we have to chip down and say, what's my real value about my child in school? Is it that they are surrounded by their peers in a loving and safe manner? Is it that they don't fall behind when it comes to academic achievements? Is it that their world stays as normal as possible? What is the real thing that matters here? And then how can we work within that sphere of what we can't control to still enact our values? That is still within our control, at least to some degree.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think this is me quoting anybody. It's not, again, directly my opinion, but we should be going back to school because of this, or we should not be going back to school because of the vulnerability of this, or teachers, or spreading, or here's what I believe, or here's what I understand about it. And that decision is going to be made by the district, sometimes in different layers, in different levels of our state or nationally. And so, okay, I have what I'm still trying to engender, what I'm still trying to live by, the level of education I continue to try to have for my kiddo, but I'll hopefully be able to work within the parameters of what else was decided, rather than being judgmental, being stuck, being angry. We can still kind of hopefully connect with, well, what's the most important thing here, or a few top priorities here. Often it has to be balanced with how much work I can do during the day, how much my partner can do during the day, or what other times are we able to kind of intersperse this stuff within the parameters, rather than being upset, being angry, putting it outwardly negatively too.
And that's not to say that the anger and those emotions that come through aren't totally valid and don't need to be expressed.
Oh, sure. But feel your feelings.
Yeah. But to stay there and just say, well, I'm mad that they made a decision I don't agree with. Like, now you got to step back in and make a decision that you can live with. Again, like you were saying earlier, at the end of the day, can you go to bed happy with your decisions? Because you can't control anyone else's.
And staying mad could bring on trauma. Staying there in that vigilance, anger, whatever, can lead to greater trauma development. So both at the end of each day, can you be okay with what you did? Can you fall asleep? Can you even say you built somebody up that day, if we add that in? But long term, it's going to be pretty negatively impactful if you stay in that state of, I don't like this. This isn't fair. I don't agree. That person is wrong. My child is suffering with these school example situations that aren't happening. That's going to lead to a lot of buildup of trauma too.
And that long-term negative impact. So what I'm loving about everything that's coming out and that you're saying here is it's a lot of the advice, and I personally don't, there's anything new under the sun. I mean, we've learned and we live, and you know, there are sort of these pervasive universal truths. And what the richness of the soil is the truth that taking care of your body really matters. That supports your mental health. In this case, it supports your ability to adapt and move through disease hopefully with more grace. How you take care of your mental health really matters. And how you manage your values and your awareness of self really matter. This is no longer just fluffy things to do because you hope you have time on that Saturday night before you re-enter the grind. This needs to become a way of life.
Absolutely. Well said.
I think all the healthcare gurus out there are just so excited. Like, they're going to listen to us this time. They're going to call their family, chosen or not. But if that can protect us from that long-term trauma, isn't it worth the bit of effort that we have now? Because, you know, frankly, you have two choices. Are you going to rail and scream against a situation that you did not make and you can't control?
Or stay fearful.
My bias of what my trauma response is, fighting. That's right. We can also have the fearful piece. Or are we going to work within our values, work with what's important to us so that we can each day make a consistent choice that helps us fall asleep at night, knowing we did the best that we could with what we had?
Yes. This is about, I guess the other theme today would be about enduring. Mm-hmm. And staying flexible and managing uncertainty. So this is all going to help us to endure however long this is going to go.
Yeah.
In all the uncertainty we have.
It makes us more resilient. I mean, we'll be stronger people for it. Yeah.
Less trauma, more resilience.
So your choices. Any other parting thoughts or really important nuggets to understand in that understanding of trauma and PTSD that you want to share with us today?
You know, I just feel like such a broken record. I think it has to be that flexibility, because that's what leads to reduced trauma. That, oh, I thought it was going to be this and now it's this. Let's stay flexible. Mm-hmm. Also, having to decide in uncertainty is make your decision, use your information, go with what you need to do, follow the timeline you have, the restriction you might have, mm-hmm. and also then stay flexible about what could still come, hopefully and for the better. Hopefully it's because we'll have health improvements and because we'll have new developments and discoveries. But let's be open to that stuff too, if we can.
Yeah, I love that. I love that flexibility. I love that resilience. And it's the things that we have to grow through and struggle through that make us stronger. I think there are a lot of people who have had that. You know, I think we always call it that blessing of a life that doesn't have much trauma in it, that they didn't live through a natural disaster. Their family has been relatively healthy. They have all the food and money and resources you could possibly need. And all of that is really wonderful. It gives us security and certainty for some opportunity for higher endeavor. When we talk about that Maslow hierarchy of need kind of idea. But without things like this that build resilience, that challenge you to be comfortable with the uncomfortable and challenge you to be flexible, you know, we gain strength through challenge in all areas of our life, physical, mental, and emotional. And perhaps that is the grand reframing that we are offering in this chronic stage of global pandemic is this really a challenge to grow through, rather than something to wade through while we wait for the end with great uncertainty and fear?
Grow through. I love it. It deepens friendships right now. Mm-hmm. It could strengthen good habits. Mm-hmm. It could definitely connect parent and child in a much richer way, mm-hmm. though it's a surprise that it's going this way. We didn't expect it.
Yeah.
Partner to partner. Any new interest in the community, because it turns out our communities are quite small individually and also could be more connected than ever before with larger ones. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of really cool changes that could happen right now too.
Yeah, and we're seeing them locally. We're seeing them across the country. We're seeing great civil unrest across the United States in ways that this lack of resource and uncertainty is really highlighting and making absolutely unacceptable in a way that perhaps in the past, it was easier to just stick with status quo. There's a lot of opportunity for growth here. And I love all the layers. I mean, just from that personal all the way out to the global community, find the place, again, where your value speaks. Do you want to make that connection within your family or anywhere out into that global sphere? There's a place for everybody. And go do what makes you fall asleep at night.
Right. It's just the last measure. But try it.
Yeah.
It might, you know, help you to kind of slow down and be thoughtful about how you feel, why you're doing what you're doing, what you want to be doing.
Cool. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, thank you, Carly.
All this fantastic information. What I'm delighted about is this conversation. I think neither one of us, put words in your mouth, but neither one of us from the initial onset of what are we going to talk about would think that this conversation would end on such a hopeful note. when we talk about everything that's been going on in this, you know, chaotic year of 2020, hope is the hard piece to find, is the hard raft to hold on to. But I just so appreciate you coming and sharing how we as humans engage with uncertainty and the tools that we can have to be stronger, not, you know, more traumatized at the end of this. So thank you so much. And I'm hopeful for everyone.
Well, thank you as well. I appreciate being able to toss back and forth some of the things that I would hope that I live by as well and are offering up to clients all the time, but encouraging friends and colleagues, we are all doing this. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate being able to kind of say it and realize that we also ended up fairly hopeful after this talk.
Awesome. Well, then with hope and looking towards the next thing we can grow through together, thank you for joining us for this fantastic, I think. I'm entirely biased. It was a fantastic episode. Thank you for joining us for this hopeful episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it. Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help.